Gippy was a guitarist, really, a really stupendous musician. He could play any stringed instrument, very, very accomplished. Remember, we were in a Greek restaurant one night. He just picked up a bouzouki and started playing one. Never played it before in his life.
Yeah,
he was very, very talented musician. And, the reason he gave when he left the band was that he felt that playing R&B, he'd run its course as far as he was concerned. I think this is inevitable. People come on the road, they're touring a band 3 or 4 years. It's very, very hard slog, doing 220 gigs a year, one-night stands. If they're married or they've got children, they've got to be separated from their families, etc. And it's gets to you after a while. You know, it really does get you. And I think that Gippy left, and that was the end of that. No hard feelings, once again, as far as I'm concerned. Gippy and I are still friends.
That was bad enough, losing Wilco and losing Gippy. But then you lost the backbone, if you like, the two guys at the back.
Yeah.
Sparkle and the Big Figure. And what happened to them? They kind of left together, didn't they?
Figure, actually, for years and years, had always been saying, look, chaps, and I'm, because he was the senior member of the group as well, was married with two kids and all the rest of it, right from the word go. He said, look, I've got to give notice. In a 12-month time, I've got to leave. You know, I'll give you another year. And every year we go, oh, come on, Figs, stay another year. You know, we'd coerce him and force him to stay. So when he eventually did go, that wasn't any sort of surprise. Sparko, on the other hand, that was a bit of a surprise, because he was always the sort of bloke that was most likely to be outrageous at any moment in time, didn't give a damn about anything. And all of a sudden he met a girl, fell in love with her and married her, and she just went, no more going on the road. You know, and to see that man tamed was an awesome sight, of the demonstration of the power of woman over man, I can tell you. You know?
It's never going to happen to Lee Villa. Never say never, is it?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you get older, I think that there's going to come a point when the touring intensity's got to slow down.
Yeah, that's what I was going to think and ask you. I mean, you're playing 250-plus gigs a year all over Europe, all over the world, for that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hang's life like on the road? You must enjoy it. You must get something out of it, living out the hotels and the suitcases, and you must have been in some dumps in your time.
I've certainly been in some terrible dumps, yeah. But I've also been in some very luxurious places, but travelling is very, very tiresome, very, very, hard work. Not so much physically, more mentally.
Yeah, I mean,
you sit on an aeroplane for 24 hours and go to Australia and then get off the plane at the other end and go and walk on a stage, and you're jet-lagged out of your brains because you don't know where you are. You don't know if you're still back in London, you're in Singapore or Hong Kong, and there you are in Sydney. And you left winter and there it is in the height of summer. Things like that.
And you get some guy coming up and say, which one's the doctor?
Yeah, he wonders why you turn around and snap his head off, you know. But having said all that, I mean, I think I'm very grateful that I've been successful enough in the music business to have the opportunity to travel like this. It's a wonderful privilege. And I've been around the world 3 or 4 times. I've seen more things in 10 years than many people would ever see in a lifetime. So that's something really which is worth more than money.
What's home life like for Lee Brill? I mean, you still stay down South Enway? I mean, what's home? You can't get a chance to see it very often then.
We had about 2 months off this summer. Well, I say off, we were recording an album, but we recorded it in the town of Southend, 5-minute drive to the studio every day. So that was a little bit like working in an office. I'd get up in the morning, have my breakfast, say goodbye to my wife about 10 o'clock, go to the office, i.e. the studio, after work about 7 o'clock in the evening, go for a couple of pints with a producer and then come home and watch the telly. That was the nearest thing that I come to domesticity. But home life for me usually consists of getting up in the morning, go and buy a newspaper, go to the bookies, place a couple of bets, go to the pub for lunch, go and have a game of snooker, maybe take the wife out for dinner in the evening or whatever, you know, I mean, just the sort of thing that everybody else does. Just, when I'm at home, I like to stay home. I don't like to go off anywhere.
And because you're not Boy George, you can do these things, that's it. Because you've never gone for that kind of image. You were saying that earlier.
Nobody ever bothers me in the town that I live in. I'm accepted as, not as somebody who is well-known around the rest of the world or anything like that. I'm accepted purely as me, and that's very, very nice. And the people that I drink with in the pub, the people I socialise with, are greengrocers, second-hand car dealers, estate agents, the sort of people that everybody else meets every day. And they treat me exactly the same as I treat them, and that's exactly how I like it to be.
Yeah, and why not? Yeah, exactly.
The idea that you've got to live in some ivory tower, you can't go out without a bodyguard, people bothering you in the street, that's something which I wouldn't be interested in at all. Yeah. I'd rather quit than go through all that. I don't know how people stand it.
I was reading, this is the first time I came across this, actually, a book called, I think it was called The Name Game.
Mm.
And in it, under your name, because your name's in this book, The Name Game,
mm.
it's Lee Collinson.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I've discovered what your real name was. It's not something that you've kind of made public, obviously. Why did you choose Brillo? Well, was that sort of play on words like Brillo pad?
Yeah, exactly.
Get a little New Orleans French in it?
It was more a play on the fact that my hair used to look like a Brillo pad. Right? it all started up when we gave ourselves names in the original Feel Good, because we used to play in a pub. We were a semi-pro band, and this pub, in those very unusual thing, the man used to make a sign for the wages every week.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's common practice these days, but we didn't like the idea of this because in case it should get onto our tax, the tax man would find out about it. So we used to take it in turns to go and to sign for it. We invented these ludicrous names, and every week they got more and more ludicrous, you know. So we ended up with Wilco Johnson and the Big Figure and Sparko. My own name. So, and then because everybody got more people knew me as Brillo than they did as Collinson, and it came time to get a passport because we had to go to America and all the rest of it, I changed my name legally anyway. And now I think of myself as Brillo first, and I don't even think of myself as my original name anyway. You know, I am Brillo now, my kids are, and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.